Happy New Year! Welcome, Festivus Survivors. It's 2013, and this is the first All About Windows Phone Insight podcast for the year. Snappy music goes in here, Rafe cheers in the background, and it's Steve has to do his New Year resolution of saying nice things about Windows Phone by joining us on the podcast. Welcome, Steve!
I'm just downing my Alka-Seltzer, so you sound incredibly loud, so I'm going to put my earplugs in.
You and always sounds incredibly loud.
Yeah, I just sound very loud. I'm wearing a very muted shirt at the moment. It's not at all the sort of thing that you'd see in an episode of Hawaii 5-0, the new one. Hawaii 5-0, the old one, where it was just shirt and tie. That's fine. Anyway, welcome. Hope you all had a happy and jolly and wonderful Christmas, New Year, Festival, December and January break. We're back on. CES is on as we speak at the moment. The Windows Phone ecosystem's building up slowly. There's lots of phones that are on the way. Networks are being announced. And hopefully we've got one or two more listeners to people who picked up Windows phones at Christmas. Whether those are people who are coming back, who are going, you know, I want to try something different, welcome at www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. If you've not swung back to the website, you'll find lots more stuff there to where you talk about reviews, news, features, little things that we spot as we go around the web every day, bringing that through there. We try to bring you a flavour of everything that's happening in the world of All About Windows Phone on Windows Phone. And we get the words in the right order because we can edit afterwards. Sorry about that. Anyway, Rafe, did you have a good New Year?
I did, thank you. Yes, I enjoyed some restful period as well.
Lovely. No Alka-Seltzer needed for you then?
No Alka-Seltzer needed for me. It was all relatively uneventful.
There we go. I know Steve is the only one that's needing chemical help to get through the show. But there's a... Steve, before we started this, you said you wanted to talk just a little bit about the app update issue that some people are reporting.
What do you mean the lack of app update issue in my case? What's happening is, and this is just purely my experience, that, for example, your good self will write a story saying application X has been updated. I think, well, that's very strange. I use it every day and I wasn't told about this. I look on the live tile for the store, no number. I then go into the store application itself, no updates waiting. I then think, okay, below this, I'll type it in manually. I tap the search icon, type in application X, there it is, update. And I can update perfectly. So why the heck isn't it showing up on the homepage of the store? I think something's broken, either at Nokia's end or at Microsoft's end, probably the latter. What do you think?
I just love the fact that you used the word heck in that sort of British. I really want to swear here, but it's not quite worth my while yet. Rafe, from the technical side of things, can you take this one? Because it seems to be working for me sometimes.
Yeah, it's working for me fine as well, but there have been a number of people saying that they haven't been getting these notifications about updates. Obviously, something like this is actually coming in as a notification through the kind of standard Windows Phone platform, and it should also do a number of updates when you actually start up the Windows Store application itself. But clearly, for some people, it's not working properly. It's always difficult to see how widespread these things are. I mean, I did mention it to a Microsoft person, and they said it was actually affecting only a small number of people. And as is the way with these things, people do tend to be quite voluble when something doesn't work. And this is, I would say, one of the more serious ones, because people do like to keep up to date with their apps. And so it's incredibly frustrating. As Steve has suggested, that if you go and check things manually, you can still download all the updates. So it's purely about the notifying process. But I understand that Microsoft are aware of this problem. This is a issue with the Windows Phone Store, so it's definitely a Microsoft issue as opposed to anything else, and that it's being worked on. But we've got Steve, who doesn't have it working, so presumably he will see when it does start working and will be able to let us know about it.
So it's probably all tied in with the push notification system. I know that Microsoft have said before that push notifications was something that they were hoping to get into Windows Phone, and it's still on the drawing board, but there's a point where they had a cutoff and went, right, that's it. No new features. If it's not in on this version of 1.0 of Windows Phone 8, it'll roll up into the next update as well. So, Rafe, is it possible this is all tied in with push notifications, alerts, and the service system that Microsoft employ, not just for the store application, but for a number of the applications as well?
Well, you're sort of right there.
I'll take that.
In that it is about these push notifications, and it is about the kind of the system not working properly, but it's not really related to having a notification center, because you know, we know that notifications tend to work fine on the phone. Some people do seem to have more problems with them than others. I've never really experienced any serious delays, apart from on some of the social networking ones. But one of the things that people need to understand about the notification system is that it's not always instant, because it does depend on what state your device is in, and sort of when it comes up into a connected status, you know, when you unlock it, for example, it becomes sort of more active than when it's sitting there in idle mode. And so that can affect how quickly notifications are delivered. And in this particular instance, I can't give a definitive answer, but for example, I've seen that some people tend to get this if they're using a device without a SIM card or just using it on Wi-Fi. Sometimes the connection can be less reliable. And so what happens is the back-end system thinks your device isn't connected, despite the fact there's, you know, a perfectly usable connection there, and therefore it doesn't send through the push notifications. Rather frustrating for people that it does happen to. In all fairness, this is actually a symptom that you get on other platforms as well. The reason for these kind of push notification systems is that it's basically more power and data efficient to have a kind of a centralized notification system, i.e. there's sort of just one data connection going out. It's not even quite that simple. It's actually the way the data connection works as well. Because if you had every app, for example, the Windows Phone Store plus a Twitter app plus your game, all having separate connections, all looking for updates, that would use up a lot more data. And actually, it's really power that is the issue here, because every time you're doing connection to the internet, that's one of the most power-hungry things your smartphone can do. And so what all the platform providers try to do is consolidate notifications into a kind of a central system to avoid some of those power and data issues.
Can I interrupt, Rafe? I have a question here. I understand what you're saying, but it's not about every single application checking for updates. We've got the store application itself. It knows what applications you've got on your device. It can scan the local in a hidden file system. It also has access to the online database of every application ID and the latest versions. Surely it only has to make that one data connection, put the two together, spot the mismatch, and say, here are your updates. I don't really see why it needs to be any more or less efficient.
Because you actually want it pushed to you, so you want it to let it know there's an update. So if you just waited until you started the store app, for example, you'd only then get a notification about an update being available, and not everyone will start the store application every day. Right, It sort of, you know, goes back to why do you have a central notification system? And honestly, in some cases, a central notification system isn't, you know, the best thing to have. I'd say social networking is a good example of this, where you're doing, you know, a chat back and forth on Twitter, for example, with, you know, mentions. Actually, you want to get those as quickly as possible, because quite often it's almost like having an instant messaging conversation. But things aren't always set up for that. It's incidentally why you can sometimes have issues with implementing these kind of apps and experiences more generally on smartphones, because, you know, they're more synchronous rather than asynchronous, I think is probably the best way to put it. Yes, I mean, I don't actually know the exact details why this particular one's not working, whether there's a issue with the notification system or whether there's a problem on the back end somewhere. I mean, I would suspect there may be a problem on the back end in that, you know, what's happening is somewhere on the back end, you know, there's them going, right, this person has these apps installed, we need to send them a notification saying that there's an update available, and maybe that's going wrong somewhere. It might not be the notification system itself. So I'm sort of having to hedge around this a little bit, but hopefully that offers a bit of explanation. And one thing I will say, I mean, I found in Windows Phone 8 that notifications are generally more reliable than they were in Windows Phone 7. I mean, part of this, there's always a tweaking to, you know, when should your device come up and be available for notifications. And some people say, I want it to be always on, getting them as quickly as possible. But of course, that does have implications, say, for power usage. So it's not quite that simple. I mean, to give you a much simpler example of this, people will be aware of battery saving mode that kicks in when the battery drops below, I think it's 25% or so. And that will actually switch off all notifications because they use power. And that's kind of an indicator of why these systems are necessary at all.
The one thing I want to say about updates, it's a simple one, and it's to the developers out there. Can we have some change logs, please? And I know the technical details are all very interesting, and it's great to get an application 35 minutes before you could otherwise, but I just like to know what's different.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, I think that's particularly, we've had some updates from manufacturers and it's been HTC, Samsung and Nokia all issuing updates without necessarily changing the description in the Windows Phone Store. So it can be quite difficult to work out what's changed. I mean, my personal suggestion would be, I think it's important in the first paragraph of an app, that's where you kind of do the three-line summary, and then maybe you talk about some features. But I think there's room at the bottom of the description to kind of have a changelog area. Maybe for the last couple of updates, you include what are the key changes there. I mean, it goes back to, you know, how much information do you provide? And there's a certain school of thought that says, you know, keep that description in the Windows Phone Store kind of relatively short, because you want it to sort of people to read it and digest it and then download the app. And this is all related, like any kind of retail experience, it's about conversion rates on return on interest. In other words, you're kind of optimizing that text to get people to A, download it, and B, then buy the application. And I think changelogs are sometimes seen as sort of a bit unnecessary, getting in the way of new users, whereas of course for people updating that, you want to know what's changed. I guess the other way to do this, which I've seen a few apps do, is they'll actually pop up a screen the first time you run the application on the subsequent occasion saying these are the changes. And I actually think that's quite a good way to do it as well.
Indeed. Now, one of those changes that we did see over the break was in Nokia's accessories. That was it. It's just we changed the accessories and we're going to improve them. And after a bit of hunting, Rafe, you've been able to test this one. It's the idle screen when you're on wireless charging.
Yes, I mean, this accessories thing is actually a module within the settings application. And as people probably know, manufacturers can sort of put in their own modules, and Nokia has several of them, so does Samsung and HTC. In this case, it's about accessories, and it's kind of giving extra functionality and information about Nokia accessories. And so it can range from something as simple as just seeing the battery level on a Bluetooth headset, or customizing the what's known as the My Own Key on some of the Nokia Bluetooth headsets as well. That's so you can, you know, start a certain command or do a speed dial. But the update, as far as we know, for this particular one was actually related to the DT910 desktop wireless charging stand. And this actually has NFC functionality built into it. So you tap it with the top of the device and put it on the stand. It will start up an application. And with this most recent update, there was kind of, as well as kind of all the built-in applications, there was also a weather application added. And I described it as an idle screen because it was kind of the nearest thing that I could come to, that you can set it to start this weather and calendar app, and it will show information about the weather in your particular location, as well as a clock and some calendar information as well. And it'll actually move those elements around the screen. So it's a bit like a screensaver, I suppose. People coming from Symbian may kind of recall things like the sleeping screen. It's kind of a bit like that in the way it works. But actually it's something rather different, which is why I described it really as an idle screen. Of course, because it's sitting in a wireless charging stand, it's got power all the time, so it can leave the screen on all the time. So it kind of works quite well as a desktop clock, or just, you know, leaving it and sitting there. Of course, if you get incoming calls or things like that, you know, you'll still have them pop up on the screen. But I thought it was a rather nice extra for people who have bought this wireless charging stand. And say it's you'll find it within the settings app, and actually Nokia use these settings apps to kind of deliver small updates. People might not always be aware of them. You know, there's things like I think it's quality improvement, and there's network, and there's a few others. And I think actually Nokia sneak in more updates there than people may realize, and some of them don't do anything visibly, but maybe optimizing something in the background. So generally they're well worth installing. I mean, there was a recent one, I think, for the display and touch, which enabled you to have more control over turning off high contrast mode and super sensitive touch, because both of which use extra power. And I think it's the high contrast one that's basically making it more visible in sunlight. But if you're not in high sunlight conditions or bright indoors, you may not want to have that on all the time, and you could potentially save a couple of percent on your battery.
You mean Scotland?
Well, yes, it feels like the UK generally at the moment. I'm not sure when we last had a day of sunshine.
Bring me sunshine. There we go. And as well, now, people who aren't smiling or aren't smiling over the weekend, this whole fury online about Google taking away maps from Windows Phone users. And I've got to say, it's a perfect storm of people getting the wrong idea of the stick and jumping to conclusions. To set the scene, I think we have to remember that last week, as we were recording this, Microsoft put out a very strongly worded post about the fact that they weren't getting access to certain parts of YouTube, namely through the API access. And Google's answer is, well, we've given you an HTML5 version of YouTube and that's good enough. And what they don't have is access to do a full application. And this has caused problems when you look at something like MetroTube. Whenever Google updates YouTube, MetroTube kind of like has to wait a week or two, work out what's going on, reverse engineer it, and get the code back in again, which isn't suitable for a first-party application size your operating system. So Microsoft had already went on the offensive. Google had already said, you get a more limited experience. They've also said, we're not developing for Windows Phone because there's not enough of a user base. And they'd just been told by the FTC in America that they weren't going to get the equivalent of a Monopolies and Mergers Commission's investigation. Rafe, I forget the exact phrasing that American lawyers use for this. Antitrust.
Antitrust, which has been going on for a while. It's probably worth pointing out there is still some investigation going on in the EU, and it's quite a complex legal issue, but we maybe come back to that later.
I think the main one I'm putting here is the FTC said, while there are going to be individual areas looked at, we're not going to do a big overall looking at Google. I think in their words, it's because Google is being very businesslike, but they couldn't actually tie that in as being anti-competitive from a user's point of view. But anyway, that was the stage setting. You know, Google had been being evil to Microsoft and then be told that they could get away with being evil in the eyes of some people out there who are writing. Then a couple of people leave comments on websites just saying that I'm trying to get to Google Maps on my Windows Phone browser. I'm not seeing that. I'm being told, given to just a regular web page where I can download applications and use the search box. And that just went boom all over the internet that Google had changed the code and Microsoft were no longer getting to have the m.google.com/maps on their Windows Phone. Turns out in the end, Rafe, that we never had it in the first place. It was just some smart code that would pass everything over to Bing. And then, as I said, it was a perfect storm of people jumping to conclusions and writing very quickly.
Yes, I mean, it's difficult to work out exactly what went on here. I mean, speaking from a personal point of view, I've never actually used Google Maps that I can recall on the phone, apart from in the odd search result, and that's obviously worked fine for me, because actually I find that Nokia Maps is superior for me here in the UK. Also, an added complication is this redirection that you're talking about doesn't seem to apply to all Google sites. So, for example, the UK one it doesn't apply to, but it does seem to apply in the US. As far as we can tell, there wasn't any big change over the weekend. It may be that people kind of started noticing it. So I personally don't think this is part of, you know, Google's or evidence for an evil master plan by Google to kind of do down plucky little Windows Phone. Obviously, at the same time, it doesn't mean I don't think that Google shouldn't treat Windows Phone better. And some of the statements that Google came out with over the weekend were frankly a bit disingenuous. I mean, they talked about only supporting WebKit browsers, and the implication with all of that was it's you should have a WebKit browser, etc., etc. I think that's partly, you know, down to trying to deal with that kind of furore at a weekend. Probably, you know, you've got a different team on comms duty, on kind of rapid response duty. It's interesting. I think it's just part of a wider trend that we're seeing, that people are seeing more and more friction between the sort of different ecosystems. And, you know, Stephen Elop, you know, elicits very mixed views, I think it's fair to say. But I think he was spot on when he talked about wars of ecosystems. And was, you know, we've been talking about it for a while, but I don't think everyone's kind of quite twigged to what that means yet, you know. And relatively speaking, we've had quite a few recently. So we had Google dropping the Exchange ActiveSync support, as you mentioned a while back, and we talked about on the podcast, and obviously the YouTube thing, which has been going on for a while now. And all of these are basically seeing, you know, how do you define what you have a right to as a user, and, you know, what is a company obliged to do before it's, you know, A, becomes evil and B, becomes illegal. You know, the YouTube one is particularly interesting because what people argue is that Google is using its dominant position in one market, i.e. kind of internet video, to, you know, give it an advantage in another area, in this case, smartphones. I actually think there's probably more of a case to answer there than in most places, just because of how ubiquitous YouTube has become. And it's quite complicated whether something is illegal or not, and I'm not a lawyer at all. So I have to phrase my comments quite carefully when I say, you know, I think, yes, that Google is deliberately degrading the YouTube experience on Windows Phone. And no, I don't think that's something it should be doing. It's very easy to cry conspiracy theory, whereas, you know, Google would probably just say, oh, Windows Phone isn't big enough for us to worry about. But I think that's a bit disingenuous when Microsoft is clearly one of their major competitors, and some of these issues are going to revolve around Windows 8 as well. And whatever Google like might say about there not being enough users, you can bet your life that they're planning to support it if it gets to the point where it is big enough. And they won't talk about when it will be big enough, and some of the things they do support have even smaller user numbers. So, you know, it's a tricky question. People do tend to fall down on one side or the other. Frankly, what irritates me in general is whenever this kind of clash happens, you know, it's the users that suffer. But it's as you would expect, you know, in all of these cases, the big corporations are interested in making money, and that's what their motivator is. And quite often, what's in the best interest of the user gets left behind. I mean, happily, much of the time, you know, they do coincide, because it's basically the way things will naturally go. You know, generally, making happier users equals better able to get money out of them, but that's not always the case. So this kind of lock-in, we'll see more. But yes, this Google Maps for mobile kind of caught my attention, because it was all a bit of a storm in a teacup, as far as I could see. You know, it's still kind of spinning out, and we'll see what happens. You know, actually, the experience works pretty well if you're, you know, doing a Google search and then need to get a map. As you say, it will, you know, bring up the appropriate app or the map icon, and some people don't like it. It's probably worth mentioning there are a number of third-party apps within the Windows Phone Store, which probably have dubious legal provenance in some ways, that use kind of Google Maps data, and you can kind of access a fairly full Google Maps experience that way. You know, here it was particularly the tie-in with the sort of search results and accessing it via the web. And I've got to imagine most people, when they're doing map-based stuff, are actually going in via a specific map app, either the default map app on Windows Phone, kind of Bing Maps, or using Nokia Maps. So I found it difficult to get too outraged about this, to be quite honest.
Ah, but you find it difficult to get outraged about much, Rafe. Remember our attempt to get you to do a rant in our Christmas show?
Yes, fair enough.
All we need for you is to adopt the word heck, and we're there.
Okay, I will try to drop heck in at some point.
Indeed, yes, let's drop the heck. Steve, you don't have to use the word heck, but let's go on to happier things. We have had a look at the HTC hardware for Windows 4 and 8 in depth. We've had a good look at the Lumia range of the 920, 820 and the variants that are coming through there. And now we have the Samsung Ative S, which, apart from the weird name of Ative, you're quite impressed with the S, aren't you?
I'm impressed in some ways. I'm impressed particularly with the back. Now, this may sound rather strange, but if you've ever looked at the photos of the Ative S, maybe you can't quite appreciate it on screen, but in the hand, it looks and feels like brushed stainless steel, but it's not. It's plastic. It's thin, bendy Samsung plastic as usual, but it looks $1 million. And all I can say is I want this on every single plastic phone I own, because it's absolutely fabulous. However Samsung came up with this in their R&D department, they should be congratulated, because it works an absolute treat and makes the device look much more premium than it otherwise would do.
So there we go. What about the front of the device, though, when you're using it? Or are you just being nice and sidestepping?
Yeah, it's a 4.8-inch screen. It's identical to the one in the Galaxy S3, which I guess was kind of cutting edge a year or so ago. But now with the Lumia 920 from Nokia, which admittedly is no LED, but it is RGB, this is Pentile, and it's a Super AMOLED. It's very good. It's very good. It's just not quite as good as Nokia's. And the rather annoying thing, maybe Rafe can comment on this, is that the Lumia 920 has a jet black bezel around the screen, but the screen itself, of course, is backlit, so you have a very slight grey tinge, very, very slight. The Samsung has a genuinely black screen because it's OLED, but then a kind of dark grey bezel. Why on earth Samsung didn't go for a jet black bezel, and then it would be just like the Lumia 800, and the screen text would just flow off into the darkness, Star Wars style. So I think they missed a trick there. It's very fast, very fast, very pleasing in the hand. The camera is excellent so far in my test. The camera is equaling that of the 920, I'd say. I'll have to do some more analysis and watch out for an article on the site. But the camera is excellent, as it was on the Galaxy S3. It's the same unit. And very, very good indeed. The speaker's a bit harsh and tinny, but it is loud. It is usable. no real surprises other than the fact there's no Nokia software, which I guess shouldn't be a surprise, but having got so used to Nokia Drive and Nokia Maps on the Lumia range, just all of a sudden not having it and having to find all of my own, I know, core applications and try and find third-party versions, for example, it's just a tiny bit of a shock. But I'll get there, and the review will appear on the site in due course.
I want to come back to that. The camera's as good as the 920 because right now, Samsung's PR department are now putting their feet up going, hey, hey, hey. And Nokia's PR department going, but we've got PureView. We've got this wonderful spring-driven automatic low-light sensor. That's not there in the 80. So how justify yourself, I think, is what I'm trying to get at here.
Samsung have been doing these 8-megapixel backside illuminated sensors now for longer than Nokia have. I mean, Nokia just recently, I think the 920 sensor is BSI, but that's quite new to Nokia. And don't forget that this a 920 PureView system is nothing whatsoever to do with the PureView we saw on the 808 on the Symbian platforms. It's not like they can learn lessons on one platform and move the expertise directly across to another. So basically, I think Samsung had more experience with this particular sensor and getting the absolute most out of it. It's clear from just looking at the differences in the Nokia Lumia 920's photos from the PR 1.0 software to the Portico update, the PR 1.1. And the images are very definitely much better in daylight. They're sharper and some of the noise reduction issues have gone away. But there's still room for improvement. And the very fact that it keeps changing shows that Nokia are still learning. They're still tweaking things. And I expect better results again in PR 1.2. But at the moment, for many of the shots, rather surprisingly, I would say the Active S is certainly the equal of the 920. Yeah.
Okay, so if you had to grab any Windows phone, Steve, to take pictures, which one are you going to grab?
I would grab the 920 because in low light it is the champion, and ultimately it's got more flexibility. I could probably hand it to my wife or daughter and they could wave it around and not be very steady on their feet, and it would still take a good photograph. The Active S does need someone actually hold the device fairly still, and that's maybe my expert hand, but most people wouldn't be quite so sensitive, so I'd still probably grab the 920.
Yeah, it's interesting because I haven't used an Active S for any amount of time, but it comes back to kind of something we talked about early on about the 920 being, I mean, a bit more forgiving outside professional hands. You know, we're used to taking a lot of photos with our camera friends. We review a lot of devices, so we kind of know how this stuff works. And it's not sort of, you know, any superior non-user, you know, experts or anything particular like that. But it is just the little things that Steve was mentioning, camera shake there. And also, I think the optical image stabilization on the 920 does make it superior in low light conditions. So it's the kind of the old chestnut of, you know, which camera is best. Well, it really depends on which conditions you're looking at. And, you know, probably a better camera phone will take more decent pictures in a larger range of conditions and be a bit more forgiving of the people using it. Based on the specs, and particularly Steve saying it's the same as the Galaxy S3, that's a very fine camera phone, and anyone that's used that will recognize that. I mean, what's interesting for me about the Active S here is it feels still like, you know, Samsung have taken one of their Android devices, and you can choose which one, because actually there's elements coming in from several different devices, and have put Windows Phone on it. It doesn't feel like they made the same effort that HTC and that Nokia did. And I think it particularly then comes back to the software. You know, I think there's some really nice things about the HFS, and actually has a few points over and above other devices. And I'm sure Steve will mention things like micro SD card support, large battery capacity, removable battery indeed.
Yeah.
But those aren't quite enough to kind of outweigh some of the advantages that HTC have, and probably even more so Nokia have, in that, you know, designing a phone for Windows Phone, it's that kind of X factor difference. It's quite hard to define, but then it becomes easier when you talk about the software and you go, well, you've got Nokia Drive, you've got Nokia Maps, and then there's a whole bunch of other exclusive apps. You know, Nokia Music's another important one, but also within the, you know, Windows Phone store itself, there's things like Nokia Reading, the transport apps, some of the third party ones that have been licensed exclusively, just make a really big difference. And, you know, it's not in the hardware specs. It's kind of interesting to see that the kind of, you know, which Windows Phone device you should buy. Well, look at the designs. Some people will have a preference for one over the other. I know there's people out there who really like the Samsung style. You know, it's kind of, I think it's probably fair to say it's more plastic and glass than the HTC Nokias, which are still plastics, but it's polycarbonate. So it's a very different feel to the device in the hand. And there's obviously the weight issues come in as well.
Can I just interrupt here, Ray? Because there's a good point there. But both devices are actually plastic. The Lumia feels a lot more solid, even though the Ative S looks like metal. And it's a really deceiving. You pick the two of them up and they both feel wrong. And I can't explain it other than neither of them feels better for Windows Phone. They just feel very, very different. I think it really, really will come down to a personal preference.
It will. I mean, you were talking particularly about materials, and I was kind of thinking a little bit about some of the shape of the device and kind of the approach. I mean, Nokia goes for this minimal design style, which is very much, I think, in keeping with what Metro does, you know, making things flatter, taking away any unnecessary bits of UI, or in the case of hardware design, buttons on the outside or trim. You know, you can over-exaggerate that, but you're right. It comes down to a lot of personal preference. I mean, it's interesting. I've seen a lot of people say they prefer the Nokia device style. And we should be quite careful when we talk about materials and say plastics. That encompasses a very broad range of materials. And so, you know, the surface on them can be quite important. We've just seen some reports of the HTC 8X, which is plastic as well, the polycarbonate, saying some of the cover, the surfaces coming off the blue 8Xs. And then, you know, if you scratch a polycarbonate thing, in theory, the color's integral, so you shouldn't see anything, but it depends on the color of the device you have. So I guess it's something we should probably talk about more in the future. But the kind of the broad point I was making is that, you know, design-wise, I think HTC and Nokia may just have a slight edge because they've done something different, whether that's because it's different or because it's more suited to Windows, and I guess we could debate. But what kind of pushes the Nokia device over the edge is the software difference. And that's what they're using to differentiate themselves from other Windows Phone devices. So people are going, well, which Windows Phone device should I buy? And kind of the safe option is to go, well, get the Nokia device. I mean, there's a broader range, especially we've got the 620 coming in soon as well, which will compete against the 8S, which was otherwise kind of the low-cost device to buy, I guess. But more than that software, I think, also is a bit of a differentiation from more generally in smartphones, that you know, when you get it out of the box, the Nokia devices are some of the most functional that you can get. And it'll be interesting to see whether this starts to tell over the next year, because people have been talking about apps more and more, but there's also this sort of, not app fatigue exactly, but how do I find the good apps? And, you know, some experiences on a phone are more central than others. You know, Maps apps have become a lot more important. And it's not just about the maps, it's the, you know, the public transport, the driving part of that, and offline usage and using it in different countries and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it comes back to, you know, if you had a choice, 920 or 8FS, on hardware, there's not a lot to choose between them. I mean, I think the 8FS has, you know, an advantage on maybe some elements of the screen, on the battery, and maybe you could talk about the memory as well. Whereas the 920 is probably superior in terms of things like other elements of the screen, you know, daylight conditions, maybe arguably design, but then you know, it's quite a heavy device. But then it comes back to the software. So it's an interesting one. I mean, Steve, you said 920. Is there anything, you know, that could make you change your mind about that? If you had the Nokia software, say, on the Samsung device, would you pick the 8FS over the 920?
I think I'd have to go with Nokia, simply because I'm become so dependent on Nokia Maps, Nokia Drive particularly, and also Nokia's general expertise with imaging. I've got more confidence that long-term right. Nokia will get things right in that department.
So if the map stuff went away, because, you know, there are some suggestions that, you know, other Windows Phone devices could, you know, get some of that map stuff themselves, they've chosen not to yet, or, you know, just ignore it altogether and say, right, you've got exactly the same software on each one. Is that going to remain the case?
Well, in that case, I would go for the Ative S simply because of the removable battery and the micro SD, which are important to me personally. I recognise that the world is going away from replaceable batteries, but that's me. I like the flexibility. I like having the possibility of sticking a new battery in a year down the road, or having a spare battery in my pocket for, you know, a weekend trek or something. That's me, and I would go for the Ative S. But it's a really tough balance. I've got three or four Windows Phones on my desk, and they've all got pros and cons, and I just cannot really pick a winner at the moment.
And maybe that's the sort of conclusion we should draw about the new Windows Phone 8 series of devices. If you've got three, you know, pretty competitive devices, and then when you start measuring them against their competition, both Android and I guess iOS as well, they're a lot closer together than they were a year ago. And I guess that's probably pretty good for the prospects of Windows Phone in 2013.
Indeed, 2013, of course, is the year Windows Phone really does have to make an impact, and especially in the mind share as well. And that means that it needs to be used in the real world. It needs to get the sort of media stories and everything on side. But before we close off and we do our regular wraps of the week, and try and get back in a weekly schedule and all of that, how do we all get on with Windows Phone over Christmas, guys? I know for me, sitting with the 820, I had an interesting issue with the music player where the data library got corrupted, so I had to reset the device. I'm still trying to work out where that bug came from. I think it's because I'm syncing over 27 different computers. But I just love the fact that it was always ready. And Steve, perhaps you can help me in this field, but the Lumia 820's white balance seems to be more lifelike and realistic than I remember on the Lumia 800.
The 800 had various white balance issues. That was famed for that, and I'm putting the blame firmly in Windows Phone's door here rather than Nokia, because Nokia used to get white balance right every time on Symbian. As soon as they shifted platform, everything started going haywire. But as you say, they do seem to have drastically improved things with the 820 and 920, and I haven't had a single issue of wrong white balance on the 920 so far.
Yeah, the other one that I really enjoyed with the 820 over the Christmas period was it's a fine size. It's the first, you know, larger than 4-inch screen on a smartphone that I've actually felt comfortable and happy using. And it's strange because it's very similar to, as we know, the Lumia 900. I never really got on with the 900, was quite happy to move back to the 800. But the 820, really pleased with the sort of, just the sort of form factor and everything. Although I do have one thing that I would like to just draw attention to. I have the shell that has a QI charging plate in the back of it. And it gives a very, very, very slight bevel to the back of the 820. And it's hard to see. Normally you think it's just a sort of straight back. But it means if you put it down, screen up on a table, and you just very lightly tap one of the corners, it'll start spinning round quite easily. There's no LRF support. There's no huge bank of friction. It's like a pudding bowl that is completely and utterly round all the way around. And it's one of the few annoying things that I've found on the device, because when I've got the power cord on, because I don't have a QI charging pad yet, it spins it round, so it's in the close, the cable, there's enough torque on the cable to spin the device round rather than leaving it where I put it. So
you need to move the cable, Ewan.
Oh, I can't move the cable because the USB socket's there.
Anyway. I think it's an executive toy. I think the whole feature is designed so you can play with it on your desk and you're just misusing it.
Right, fair enough. So, Steve, how did you get on with Windows Phone over Christmas then?
Well, I struck caution to the wind, as it were, and I put my 808 PureView to one side, and I put my main SIM in the Lumia 920, and I used it non-stop throughout the whole of the festivities. I took a load of photos of family and friends, and do you know what? Most of them, 98%, came out really, really well. I was very, very pleased indeed. A couple of shots where people were moving and things were blurred, and where the 808 with its Xenon flash, blah, 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 would have taken a better shot. But most of them, I mean, I put up a feature about one of my shots of a steam train, you know, in atmospheric low light conditions with steam swirling around. Really, really pleased with it. So music and podcasts, absolutely brilliant. I'm very happy indeed with the speaker in the 920. I've been using the Podcatcher third-party software, which has recently been updated. That's very good as well. I'm using Twabit for Twitter. Every application I want basically is here. Netflix, which maybe we'll come to our app of the week later, and I'll expand on that there. HandySafe, HDR camera I'm playing with, MetroTube, you've already mentioned. Some great applications. I basically have completely covered, and I'm very, very happy with 920. Windows Phone 8 has basically more or less solved the multitasking issue, because it's faster, the processors are faster, there's less waiting around. The Wi-Fi dropping off thing has been fixed because I've managed to put on this Portico update. So I'm kind of sorted, really. I hate to sound positive on a All About Windows Phone.com podcast, but I'm actually quite happy with this.
So hold on a second, Steve. For all your ranting and raving and all of your I need a phone to do this, in a sort of percentage scale, how... if Windows Phone was all you had, how much would it be doing compared to your perfect dream smartphone? Are we talking 70%? Have we hit the 80-20 rule? Are we higher?
I think we're with the Portico update and the Wi-Fi not dropping out every 10 seconds. I think we're up into the 90s. I think we're just edged over 90% and heading towards the perfect 100.
Now, this is the... Okay, where would you rate the Nokia 808? Which is a Symbian device with the big camera sensor and everything. But where would you put that number-wise?
It depends how heavily I weighted the camera functions, of course. I mean, for my personal use, I put the 808 at something like 93, 94. But then I do recognize that some of its core features in terms of, you know, social networking and web browsing will be a complete showstopper for other people. So it's for me, subjectively, I'll put the 808 higher, but that's just me.
See, Rafe, this is where it's interesting. This is the sort of battle that Windows Phone has to do, almost at an individual level, because Steve's reticence to Windows Phone is legendary to people who are listening to the podcast. But now that he's actually sat down, he's actually used it in the real world and found out what it does and the application, the ability and stuff and everything, he finds they can do the majority of things that he wants in a smartphone. And that is the case for Windows Phone. But it's how are Microsoft and Nokia and HTC and Samsung and all the other partners that are coming up, how are they going to evangelize and get that message through during 2030? Because it just seems like everybody else is just that, nope, it's gone, it's an Android world.
Yeah, I think it's something that just takes time. I mean, one of the, I think, issues that Windows Phone does face is this almost this sense of people who are, you might describe them as power users or early adopters, whatever your preferred terminology is. They kind of, they just don't care. They're not interested in trying it. And Microsoft have said time and time again, you know, when people try Windows Phone, they really like it. I think added to that now with Windows Phone 8 now, you could say, whenever anyone tries it, you know, they'll find a decent experience, and not everyone's going to, you know, love it and want to use it over everything else. But that sort of sense of parity, I think, is now much, much closer than it ever was with Windows Phone 7.5. There's still, you know, work to be done. But you're right, you know, a lot of it is really about perceptions, and, you know, it's the familiarity principle. You know, people don't want to change if they don't have to, but as I've said before, you know, the smartphone industry has been incredibly dynamic in the last few years, and I see no reason why that couldn't change. You know, need to keep pushing out some innovative devices, and if Nokia and HTC, I think, did the best job with the kind of the first of the Windows Phone 8 devices, can do that again the rest of the year, that will certainly help. But I think it's pretty notable, just from, you know, my personal point of view. You know, Steve is a sort of typical user that I look at as being, they're quite fussy, you know, and he said himself, I don't think you'll mind me saying, particular about his set of usage circumstances and what he likes in a device. But the fact that he's mostly happy now is, I think, a pretty significant step. So yes, you're right, the question does become, how do you build on from that? I think you have to be somewhat careful here, is don't over-obsess on the high-end users. Yes, they're very important. Yes, they're influencers, and you know, they have an impact that's probably much bigger than the actual size of the group, because, you know, they're often the ones that are recommending phones to friends or people come to for advice. But I still think it's, you know, you build a phone that's, well, you want to make it perfect for everybody. That's not possible, but you make it as good as you can for as many people as you can. And I think the early adopters are amongst the most fussy. And I still think most of those are going to look at Android and go, well, I prefer that because of the flexibility it offers. You know, Windows Phone offers a kind of a different approach. In many ways, I think it's between iOS and Android, you know, between the kind of the, you know, it's Apple's way or the highway, or Android kind of not open for everything, because it, you know, open depends on the definition there. But certainly there's the kind of the philosophy perhaps lies between the two, a certain amount of central control, but also personalize the device yourself, you know, what you want to do with it. It's very hard to talk about that in general circumstances, but hopefully people can understand where I'm coming from there. And it's about, you know, making sure that there's good devices out there, making sure people can actually buy it, i.e. it's on the shelves when they walk into a phone shop. So it's doing the deals with the operators. So some of the ones in China recently are significant. You know, now the UK, we've seen the Lumia 920 is available on most of the other carriers after the end of the kind of EE exclusivity period, and, you know, work out how those are working, what are the most effective ways of putting it into the sales channel. It's not just about, you know, what's in phone shops, it's about what's on the web, what's on it when people phone up a carrier and ask for an upgrade, all that kind of thing. It's a very complex picture, and it's something that, you know, I've talked to Nokia executives quite a few times over the last 24 months, and every time they said, you know, it's a story that will take time, and what we want to do is step it up bit by bit by bit. And you know, I've always been slightly skeptical about that, because of course that's what they're going to say. But the evidence does seem to suggest that that strategy is working, just not perhaps as fast as people were expecting. So actually, I think the interesting thing to look for in 2013 is, you know, how much market share can Nokia gain? It's not a question of whether it's going to gain. It will gain something. But is it going to be, you know, go to 4%, or is it going to go to 6%, or, you know, more than that? And a lot of that depends on what the rest of the industry does and changing, you know, consumer patterns. We've seen how quickly something can get, you know, taken up. And Android, very good example of that recently. Obviously, the original iPhone as well. They didn't come out of nowhere, but it was, you know, they went from sort of being in a position where they'd sort of been introduced to then growing very quickly in their kind of third or fourth year. And obviously, that's the point at which Windows Phone is now approaching. And so, well, we say this a lot on the podcast, but we'll know a lot more in sort of 12 months' time.
Yeah, it's also fair to point out for people who are watching history that a long time ago, Samsung did have the dominant mobile OS, which was Symbian OS, but they were the second fiddle partner to Nokia inside Symbian Foundation and all that history and ownership and everything. And Samsung walked away to start again, essentially. They started with Android and they are where they are now. So they did have that rapid ascent, you know, and you know, there were companies that were really, really big previously, and they have just disappeared and wiped out. Motorola is the obvious one, still lives on in name inside Google. So, you know, there are ups and downs and examples all over the shop. You know, we've seen HTC go on a really big down with the release of their financials as well. And we just have to keep an eye on what Nokia is doing. Also, you know, if Samsung are going to start putting a little bit more heft in Windows Phone 8 or not. And we also have to remember that Windows Phone 8 success is tied kind of closely to Windows 8 as well. And Windows 8 hasn't been getting, I think it would be fair to say, as much traction as was expected in some quarters. You know, if Windows 8 had taken off in the last quarter, then, you know, Windows Phone 8 on its coattails would have been dragged along as well. So it's an interesting year. I'm not going to go down the whole predictions route and everything, at least not yet, because we'd probably get it all drastically wrong. What I am going to go for is, what applications are we choosing this week as we approach the end of the first podcast in 2013? Rafe, do you want to have a swing through the apps first yourself?
Yes, well, I was just going to talk about one app of my, as my app of the week, and that's UK Bus Checker. This is actually an app that's been available on other platforms for a while, and it's kind of the definitive one for keeping track of, you know, buses that may be approaching your local area. And there's actually two versions. There's the UK Bus Checker, which is £2.49, and then there's the London Bus Checker, which I think is £1.99. The reason this is particularly attractive is that it includes real-time information on buses, so you can tap on a bus stop, and it will tell you not only where does it go, you know, what buses come to that bus stop, it will tell you how far away or in minutes your next bus is. And so, you know, if you're going to catch a bus, it's kind of the invaluable companion. So you don't have to sit there wondering, you know, is it going to be like a typical London bus and have three of them come along at the same time? But in 10 minutes time, when I've just popped in to get a newspaper, this will give you a pretty good idea of when it's going to arrive. Now, the accuracy of this information, it's generally good for within a couple of minutes. Most of the time it's more accurate than that, so accurate to the nearest minute, because it does take into account, you know, traffic conditions and all that sort of thing. The information actually comes from Transport for London, but the app does also cover the UK more generally, and in some places there's real-time information. The UI has been done pretty nicely. It's actually using Nokia Maps on the back end for doing some of the mapping stuff. There's various live tile functionality and everything else. So well worth a look if you're ever catching a bus in the UK.
Okay, Steve, one from yourself.
Well, I did mention Netflix earlier. I want to return to that. You may have heard of Netflix. It's advertised quite a lot, especially in America. Basically, it's you'd think it's just films over the internet, which is good enough, although the number of films you can get isn't actually that high. What's special about Netflix is it also includes a huge amount of television programs from America and from the UK in this case. So, and the best thing of all is that you think, well, I'll have a browse through Netflix. I'm signed up and I can view my content on my iPad and my PC and my Mac and my various phones. And now it's on Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7. So, for example, you think, well, I fancy a bit of The Office. And that's the American Office. I haven't seen that. And then you realize you've got four series at whatever it is, 20 programs per series. And well, that's 150 hours being. I could be a while, darling, and you settle down. There's a huge amount of content, and it's all available in really high quality on your Windows phone. I love the fact that the quality is adaptive, and that if your bandwidth does have problems, it doesn't actually drop the program out. The audio carries on, and the picture quality just dips slightly, and then it restores the quality, restores the bandwidth, and then it's back up to full quality. You don't have to sit there watching a buffering thing going round and round. I love that, the fact that it just carries on. I love the fact that you can actually pay for Netflix via PayPal, which is not really a Windows Phone 8 facet, but I just love that about it, that I don't have to fork out hard cash. I can fork out virtual cash, as it were. So loads to like about it. If you are a Netflix customer, you can sign up for the trial. There's no code. We're not trying to make money out of this. I'm simply recommending it because I'm a big fan. And I just love all this TV content on my phone, wherever I am, whenever I want to see it. Great stuff.
Okay, I'm going to pick up one that seems slightly simpler, but is actually proving to be just really nice and personalized as well. And that's Live Tile Countdown, which simply creates a live tile that counts down to a specific day in the future. And you can have multiple dates and you can have multiple live tiles coming up. And this is really useful for the small tile size that you have in Windows Phone 8. And it allows me just to put a little counter next to my Eurovision Song Contest 2013 album, for example, or Days Until I Travel to South by Southwest, or anything else where you just want to have that sort of countdown number ticking over there. Free download, and it's just, again, a nice touch of personalization over an Android that we call widgets, you know, start screens and web tools and everything that will be coming up on your desktops. It's just nice to see this sort of flexibility coming into lifetimes. And no, it's not for everybody, but for me, it's just a really nice touch that brings the live tools and makes it even more personal to you. So I quite like that one. Right, that's us. We'll have links to the applications mentioned there and all the other links on this podcast back in the website, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com, unless you're listening in our mobile application, in which case you'll find the links by pressing the link button that's at the bottom of the screen. And the mobile application will also bring you all the news, reviews, features, flows, and headlines that we have on the website, allow you to read them on your Windows Phone 8 device as well. And Rafe, did we not have a Windows 8 copy of that application as
well? There is a Windows 8 copy of the application as well, where you'll get a very similar level of information. And I think I'll eventually train you into realize that there isn't actually a www in front of the address. It's just all about windowsphone.com.
Yeah, but www.works.
It does work as well, but it will just redirect you to plain old allaboutwindowsphone.com.
Well, you know what? I believe you just put that redirected this week, and it's terrible that you're stopping me using that www, and it's disgraceful, and I'm going to refer you to the Monopolies and Mergers Commissions and then complain about you to a high-profile website like BuzzFeed.
Fair enough.
There we go. See, satire is not dead. It just tucks itself away at the end. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you very much for listening to the Insight Podcast. You've been joined, as always, by Rafe Banford.
Goodbye from me.
And occasionally by Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye, and I can't believe that Rafe hasn't learned by now that Ewan cannot be trained, period.
Woof, woof. Right, catch you in the next show. Ta-ra for now.